Refreshing Coca-Cola, our newest sponsor. It's not Coca-Cola.
Except that I'm drinking Polar Seltzer.
Ooh, I would rather support Polar Seltzer, I think. I don't know anything about their politics in comparison to Coca-Cola's politics, but...
Could it be that much worse, you know? And you know... It always could be, but...
Right.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie, and we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Bollywood love.
Bollywood love, Bollywood infidelity.
So much infidelity.
Pretty much every single story has infidelity in some form or
infidelity.
Another.
Yeah. We're discussing Metro in Dino.
Indeed we are.
And I think that just, yeah, right off the bat, I was so here for a story of a bunch of different, like, couples of, and, like, the journey of their love. And, you know, you kind of expect some infidelity in having, you know, four couples that you're following. But it was all about infidelity. And
it literally was.
It made me sad. And then it also kind of felt like it made it seem like infidelity is just kind of a foregone conclusion. Like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's not a big deal because it's definitely going to happen in every single relationship ever. Mm-hmm. And it's really just how you work through it that matters.
Right. Yeah.
Which I don't like.
I agree. I think that at least one of the couples... And if you ask me, I have my ideas who should have not ended up getting back together. Like,
yeah,
because I liked the movie. I thought the performances were really good.
Yes.
I felt like there were all these choices that were made just for, like, shock value as opposed to what would this character actually emotionally do? Like, what would be rewarding in this arc, in what we've seen this character kind of, like, building up to actually see them, to see the choice that they would actually make? And I finished the movie feeling like, I don't feel like I believe any of these people is going to be happy with the choice that they've made.
Yeah, I feel like the hardest thing for me was I didn't know what the point was. Like, I enjoyed it, but I was very confused as to what the message was. You know, like in the first half of the movie, I was like, okay, we're going to find our way to some really interesting take on the human experience or something like that. And then, no.
Yeah.
I was like, what am I supposed to be taking away from this? Because it also felt like wires got crossed with certain things and certain words of wisdom that other characters were, like, passing on to others. And
yeah,
I liked it. And I agree, the performances were amazing.
Yeah.
But I just think it kind of got lost.
I agree. And I think that whatever the message was, like, could have had more impact if they didn't have everybody kind of end up together at the end.
Yeah.
Like, there could have been a more clear, like, dissection of why does it make sense for some people to try to work through infidelity. If it was, if the goal was just let's tell a bunch of stories about people cheating. Because, and I don't even know if that was the intention. Because there's at least two, or I guess really in, like, a solid half of the unfaithfulness. Like, it doesn't, like, it doesn't actually come to physical fruition.
It's, yeah, but emotional.
But there's emotional intimacy happening in all of these relationships, and I don't know if they were not necessarily viewing all of the stories as infidelity, or if they were and they were trying to make a point about it. And I think if they were, then that's a much more interesting point if you show why some characters it makes sense for them to stay together and work through it versus others it doesn't.
Yes, I'm surprised at the lack of diversity of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, across those storylines, like, I think infidelity, both of the emotional kind or the physical kind, is, like, fairly common. So I think it would make sense to show representation of that in a movie like this. But there are other dynamics and problems and things to explore within relationships that aren't related to infidelity.
Yeah.
And we didn't really see a lot of that because it was so tied into the infidelity. Like, there's a couple living apart where that is like its own challenge. But then it was like, well, that just led to infidelity.
And didn't that infidelity didn't even really get addressed. No. That's one of my big issues with that.
Yeah.
That relationship. We'll get into that. Yeah. But the other thing too, and I think that this leads into the same point, is that like all of the relationships, the problem was the man. And
yep.
Listen, we have our things to say about men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And certain choices that they make. But in a heterosexual relationship, it is not the case that the man is always wrong and the woman is always right. And that was very much what was kind of being put forward here, even in the relationships where the woman was doing something wrong or was contributing to the maybe not so positive dynamics within the relationship.
Yes.
And so I think a way to diversify the storytelling, even if you are going to have each of these stories bring in infidelity in some way, is to have there be opportunities for us to be looking at the women and criticizing their actions as opposed to only criticizing the men's actions.
Yes, which, not to compare this to Ludo, but we haven't watched. I know you just said you watched Life in a Metro, but I haven't seen that. So this is kind of the other piece of work from Basu that I can compare it to.
Well, that and Barfi. Like,
and Barfi, but Barfi has a different
It's a setup. Whole different thing. The only thing is the musicians playing on the streets.
Yes.
That's the same. Yes. Anyway, go on.
I love Barfi. Oh my goodness.
It's so
Barfi. But, you know, in Ludo, I think what made it work so well was that there was that, like, diversity. And between the different pairs of people, it wasn't immediately, you know, cookie cutter, like, this is the dynamic. This is the one you're rooting for. This is the one that you're criticizing.
Yeah.
It kind of kept you guessing, and that was real and authentic.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what's lacking in this. And as you were talking about how, like, you know, the man's always the problem, it also just made me remember my feeling about Aditya Roy Kapoor's character.
Uh-huh.
I think this is like pure Aditya, like, goofy energy.
Yeah.
Love him. He's so lovable.
Uh-huh.
And also, his character is like a manic pixie dream boy.
He is, yes.
Yes, he's like not his own person. He's like the idea of a person.
Yeah, and he's also like, I don't know, he had these like jokes that I was kind of like, I don't think I actually do find that funny. Sir?
Yeah.
And it was, and again, like, I agree. One of my notes in here is that this movie reminded me of how much I love Aditya Roy Kapoor. Like, we haven't seen him in something new in a while. I know he's been in stuff, but we haven't watched it. And he's so charming. Like, you
so
just
charming.
Cannot help but fall in love with him, even when the character he's playing is kind of empty, like you were saying, like, and also makes some misogynistic and kind of gross, weird comments.
Yeah.
On the side.
It doesn't matter because it's Aditya Roy Kapoor.
Because he's just so darn charming. No, I agree with that. I was going to say, because I did watch Life in a Metro, because I felt bad that I didn't know that this was like a, what was the term, spiritual sequel?
A spiritual sequel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I watched it just to kind of compare, and I do think Life in a Metro is a better movie in terms of, like, how the storylines are constructed, because there's one story that has infidelity, but then there's multiple other different types of stories getting told.
Yeah.
There are some interesting, like, thematic tie-ins, as well as some, like, this basically, the same thing happened to some people in Life in a Metro that happened to some people in Metro in Dino, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to borrow from yourself, I suppose. And after I make this last critical comment, we can get into the plot. But I was fully expecting that Life in a Metro was also going to have the characters singing their stories the way we have in Metro and Dino. No.
Interesting.
The band is consistent. The band playing on the streets and on the roofs and stuff is consistent. I don't know why that choice was made to have the characters singing in
Metro and Dino. Okay.
Yep. And I did not like it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you as soon as you brought it up. I was like, I didn't like it either. I just found it jarring. It, like, took me out of it. Because if you're going to do a fourth wall break, I feel like it has to consistently be a fourth wall break kind of film. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you're singing at me about your life, but we don't directly interact with you, the actor, again. But then you're also still singing, but it turns out your singing is real. Like, the singing is happening.
Right.
Because they're like, we just sing about our love stories. And I was like, that's dumb.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, the fourth wall breaking does happen in Life in a Metro. But this being a musical where the characters are singing their songs, but I agree with you on both fronts. Like, the fourth wall breaking, because it doesn't end up being consistent throughout, it feels like a cheap narrative device.
Yeah.
I actually really liked it in the first number. I thought that was, yes, it was kind of like a fun overture introduction kind of thing. Yes. And then the fact that it continued on, I was like, it felt really uncomfortable. And maybe this is my Western bias, I will acknowledge. I think that that kind of thing really only works if your actors are singing in their real authentic voices.
Yeah.
Or if you're making Pride and Prejudice where they made it work.
Yes. Yeah, I think if they wanted... So spoiler alert, my research was really just like reading reviews because, sure, after I finished this movie, I was like, I feel a bit confused as to like how I feel and what I was supposed to get from this. And so, yeah, I just needed to read other people's takes to help formulate my own thoughts. But a lot of the reviews mention the like Hollywood musical-esque nature of this, mm-hmm, movie. And I think that had they just kept it to that first initial opening scene, that, mm-hmm, would be like a fun homage to the, yes, Hollywood musical.
I agree.
Where it's like, oh, look, we're setting the stage. You're getting to know like the character. And then like, okay, now we're in this movie. Yeah, that would have been nice.
It's like La La Land. The opening number, yes, amazing. Everything, yes, else, okay.
Yeah, one of the critics' reviews that I will talk about was like, it didn't know when to stop.
Yeah.
Like, it's brilliant, but then it took its brilliance so far that it became not brilliant anymore.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more.
Yes. So our cast, I'm going to just go through really quickly here. We've got Papa Anupam Kher as Paramal. We've got Nina Gupta as Shivani. We've got Aditya Roy Kapoor as Parth. We've got Sara Ali Khan as Chumki. Pankaj Tripathi as Monty. Konkana Sen Sharma as Kajal. She was also in Life in a Metro. One. And was great. And so was Dharmendra, was in it too.
Oh.
He was like top billed and he was in like 10% of the movie.
You know, when you have his name, you get top billing no matter how long you're in the film.
Yeah. I agree. And then we've got Ali Faisal as Akash and Fatima Sana Sheikh as Shruti. These are all people we really like, and again, I felt like the performances were all really good, even if I didn't necessarily like what the characters were doing.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, and written and directed by Anurag Basu. So, shall we get into the plot?
Let's do.
And I was gonna say too, like, just like with my plot with Ludo, there's so much bouncing around between the characters that I don't necessarily say everything in the exact order it happens. Because there's so much ping-ponging. Yeah,
that's sometimes, very fair.
Sometimes I finish a scene with two people before ponging. But okay, here we go. We open with, like we said, an introductory song slash montage, first meeting the rooftop band, who are sort of our narrators throughout the movie.
Love it.
And we get snippets of all of our lead characters through this montage at various Holi celebrations. And then the first couple that we focus on and hear from is Akash and Shruti.
Mm-hmm.
My least favorite couple.
Yes, but I will say I do love how they like staged their, yes, like opening scenes. That was very cool.
It was fun. Yes, again, this sequence, mm-hmm, is really fun, and then it didn't match throughout the rest of the, yeah, movie. It felt forced in the other numbers. But so Akash tells us that they were an adventurous couple once, and he was an aspiring musician, but when they got married, he gave up on that dream in favor of a boring desk job, and after marriage, their families pressure them to have kids, and we see the couple find out that Shruti is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
We then meet Kajal and Monty, who are a married couple, and Kajal tells the audience that she puts on a facade of the perfect life for social media, but in reality, they're both unhappy.
Yeah. I found them the most interesting.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
I loved their storyline. Like, I thought it was really fascinating. Again, I don't necessarily love the second part of it. I feel like we kind of lost where things were going.
We lost it, and someone makes a certain very inappropriate choice that doesn't get addressed. Yeah. Again, characters in this movie do bad things regardless of whether they're men or women.
Yeah, but, like, those two actors playing opposite each other.
Yeah.
So good. It was so good.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah. They're at this party where the husbands and wives are chatting separately, and the husbands are talking about how one of them is cheating on his wife, but it doesn't count as cheating because when they kiss, they don't use tongues.
Yeah.
And we see Monty feel inspired by this.
This reminds me of the whole, like, it's like, not only are the men that are in these relationships, like, the villains, mm-hmm. but it does seem to be that if you are a husband, unless you're, like, Anupam Kher, you're a dog. Like,
right.
You just want to cheat on your wife, and it's just a matter of, like, what do you feel like you can get away with?
Yeah. Well, and this is where...
Which I don't think is true.
No, I don't think most men are like that, to be honest no. with you. This is where I feel like there could be a really interesting conversation of, like, well, we're just being physical with these women, but we're not being physical all the way. And then there are also people in this movie who are like, well, I didn't have any sort of physical intimacy with them, but I gave them, like, deep right. parts of my emotional self
yeah.
that I don't feel safe giving to my partner. And it's like, there's some really interesting dynamics to yes. explore there with, like, where do those lines get drawn? Mm-hmm. And how do they get drawn differently for different couples?
That's such a good point. Yeah, like, yeah. if you're going to have it be this much about infidelity, you should have leaned into it and explored those themes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm. But so Monty tells the audience that Kajal was the first woman he met whose hand fit with his, but now they're like strangers to one another, too afraid to talk in case they discover they have nothing left to say to one another.
Yeah.
And I just kept all that in because I thought it was very poetic.
I think it is poetic, and I think it's accurate, probably, to a lot of long-term relationships. So.
Yeah, yeah. As are the conversations that come out of these sort of discoveries that they're yes. making about themselves. We also learned that their teenage daughter, Pihu, is struggling to figure out her sexuality. And just sprinkle in references to that throughout.
Yeah.
So next we meet Shivani and her husband, who drives away from the Holi party without her. And she tells us that she gave up on her dreams to be a caretaker, but she doesn't know how to take care of herself, and now her family doesn't need her, and she feels herself getting left behind, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
Next we meet Chumki, a former class topper who doesn't know what she wants from life, but we see her assure her friends that she definitely wants to marry her boyfriend, Anand.
Mm-hmm.
Also, her boss sexually harasses her.
Like, brazenly, out in the open, just slaps her in the butt.
Slaps her butt, nobody notices or says anything. Yeah. Including her, she says that she struggles to stand up for herself or her emotions.
It's like, she's very self-aware for mm-hmm. someone so unaware of herself. You know what I mean?
I think that's a really good way of describing her character, yeah.
Yeah, it's like right off the bat, she's like, I know that these are my issues, I get it. But if you know that those are your issues, why are you making the choices you're making?
You know what, Katie? What you just said is so deeply relatable to me that I honestly, it's like sinking in for me. I'm so self-aware for someone with so little self-awareness.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Very well said. But so we go back to Shruti and Akash, who are welcoming their friend Parth to town, but they don't spend much time with him because he quickly goes off to hook up with a woman, and he tells them that he has quote-unquote arrangements in every city. He's a travel blogger, so this is what he mm-hmm. does. Meanwhile, Chumki is drunk with her friends, and she tries to give them the address of where she is staying, but she mumbles and ends up mistakenly giving the address of where we see Parth is heading for his booty call.
This is like classic Ludo.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely it is. So Parth arrives at the apartment, and he hears a phone ring. He answers it and tells the person on the other end that that person's girlfriend isn't interested in him. Sorry.
Yeah.
This was Chumki's phone, and the person that he said this to was her boyfriend, Anand.
Mm-hmm.
Chumki bursts in and throws up in the bathroom where Parth is naked taking a shower.
I love it. His squeal, like, his yeah. squeal when she comes in was so good.
And so he covers up and tries to revive her, and she briefly thinks that he is Anand and meows at him, and then realizes that he's a stranger, and she's in the wrong house, and she has a complete meltdown.
Also, all I could think in that moment when their faces are very close together is that she just vomited.
Yeah. Well, she's very drunk. She doesn't smell good.
Yeah. No.
No. She doesn't smell good.
That's a horrible meet cute.
She's breathing all over him, and yeah, it's not pleasant.
Like all over his face.
Yeah, no, but well, it does, something does it for him.
That's so true. I won't yuck anyone's yum.
Yeah. So Parth's hookup sees him with Trimki. She gets mad and leaves, but he does eventually successfully deliver the very drunk Trimki back to where she's staying. Another thing that's confusing to me about this movie is where people live versus where they're just kind of hanging out for a little while, but...
Yeah, or even like which city we're in at a given moment.
And maybe that's just like an outsider's thing, but I found it very confusing.
So I'm just reassuring you, it is not an outsider's thing.
Okay,
because
good.
Both professional critics who are based in India and audience reviewers said it got way too confusing that they were bouncing from city to city, but we weren't clear what city we were in and they weren't distinct from each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a common complaint.
I could tell when they were in Goa.
Yes,
that,
me
that
too.
Was,
there
that
were
pretty obvious.
There were white people.
that does help.
It's also just the trees and the Portuguese influence.
It's
to be clear, that
it's
was
mostly
more
that. Yeah, it's like
but
suddenly
also
they're
there.
Yeah, suddenly they're in vacation mode. But
yes.
Anyway. Trimki's back home or wherever she is, and Anand is there waiting for her. He's seen her with Parth.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see Trimki telling her mom and her sister about this, and surprise, the mom is Shivani and the sister is Kajal. They're all related.
Yes.
And so Kajal insists that Anand should trust Trimki at her word, but Shivani says Trimki needs to explain the situation better to him. And then we see Shivani get an invitation to her college reunion, and she looks wistfully into the middle distance.
Yes.
We also see a man, Paramal, receive an invitation to the same reunion. And this man lives with his daughter-in-law, and they both seem sad.
Which we don't find out early enough, in my opinion, the reason behind that sadness. Like, I also didn't like the way in which it was delivered, which was in psalm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the choices that get made in relation to that tragedy.
Oh, we're going to talk about that because that was awful.
This poor woman. This to me is the most sympathetic character in this movie.
Yes. That also is never resolved.
No, it's really not.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So anyway.
And like this movie was almost 3 hours.
I know.
What are we doing?
We could have had fewer songs and more resolution. But so Parth is about to leave town when he gets a call from Trimki. Trimki asks him to pose as her friend's husband so that Anand will realize that they weren't hooking up and she didn't cheat on him. Parth agrees and asks Trimki who is going to play the part of his wife, and she doesn't have anybody in mind, so he asks Shruti. So they go to a party with all of Trimki's couple friends, and Shruti and Parth successfully sell themselves as a couple, and Anand is no longer jealous. Great.
Great.
Then the couple start singing the stories of how they first met, and Trimki tells the story of how she ended up with Anand. Basically, they went to the same college, and then they started working at the same company. So, not super romantic.
And then he wrote on pizza and ketchup.
And mayonnaise.
And she wrote on it in mayonnaise. And I was like, ew.
Yeah, that's gross. They ruined a perfectly good pizza. And then the group calls on Parth to tell his and Shruti's story. And he says that he set out to meet one person, but someone else stopped his heart when she meowed in his ear.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh boy. And as everyone's leaving this party, Trimki takes Parth's phone and deletes her number. Because she's seeing that there's the potential for danger here.
Yep.
After this, Akash tells Shruti that he feels like he's going to have an average life and an unremarkable death, just like his father. And Shruti convinces him that he should take a second chance on his musical career and says that having a family can wait. And so they decide that she's going to have an abortion. But when the time comes for the procedure, she can't go through with it.
Yeah. Also, the vibe during that whole conversation was weird.
Yeah. Their story made no sense to me. No. I don't know what we were trying to accomplish with this story. I think it would have been a great story to really dive into, like, the emotion. Yeah. And
yeah,
emotional infidelity, and to not have the couple end up together at the end.
Right.
Because I don't think they should be together. They don't seem happy.
They don't seem happy. And, like, literally, Parth is like, you guys have, like, a toxic relationship.
Yeah,
like, that happens later. It felt like they had been equals before they married. And then, like, once they married, Shruti became a little more, like, deferential to her husband. And so in that conversation, it doesn't feel like she's voicing what she actually feels.
Right.
She's, and, like, playing a part. And that in itself is interesting and would have been interesting to delve into. Yeah.
And what's also interesting, in my mind, more interesting than the whole, like, infidelity thing that ends up happening, or really even the family planning conversations that don't happen, but, like, the career stuff is what's so interesting to me, because she had this successful career, which she probably could have supported her husband as he's trying to figure out his music career, and yet the choice is made when they get married that she quits her job and he has to get a desk job. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. And I want to know why that choice was made and how it impacted her, because I'm really interested in it.
Right. Well, and then when they flip-flop and they're like, okay, you're going to try for music again, she goes back to her career.
Yeah.
And then later on, it looks like she gave up her career again.
Yep.
And is now working at, like, a shop or something. Yeah. And I was like, what is going on? Because also, it was difficult to keep track of who's in which city for which job.
Extremely difficult, especially with these two.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, couldn't you have found a similar job in Mumbai?
That's my question, too.
Right?
Yeah. I don't understand.
No. Yeah, he was in Mumbai. She's in Delhi.
Well, but they started out in Bangalore, because that's where we start the movie. And then he moves to Mumbai and she moves to Delhi. But then she moves to, I don't know. And also, like, Pune's in here too. I don't know where anybody lives.
It's too much.
It's too much. But okay. So Kash quits his job. Shruti moves back to Delhi to start her old job over again. great. Whatever. Mm-hmm. So then it's
because she's like a reporter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, they have news stations in Mumbai. I'm sure they have plenty.
I have to imagine they do, yeah. So it's Chumki and Anand's engagement party. And at the party, Kajal sees that Monty is using the app, quote-unquote, Linger, which is Tinder. And he's, like, not subtle about it at all. He's just got his phone out with this, with, like, pictures of women, like, on
profiles.
It. Yeah. And also we see Chumki starts to follow Parth's travel blog. So she's not quite detached from that interesting little encounter.
Yes.
But so Kajal decides that she is also going to join Linger under the name Maya. And she finds Monty's profile and starts messaging with him.
Mm-hmm. Neither one of them shows their face.
No.
It drives me nuts. I'm like, do people actually have conversations with other people on dating apps where they can't actually tell what they look like?
I hope not.
Well,
it's a great way to get catfished.
Yes.
So meanwhile, Shivani is looking at old college pictures of herself with Paramal. And Paramal meets with a young man who used to be friends with his son. Mm-hmm. And this man's name is Rohan. And when he leaves, he tries to convince Paramal's daughter-in-law, Jinook, to run away with him. But she says she can't.
Yeah.
Just trying to lay stuff out as clearly as I can.
I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you. So things are tense for Akash and Shruti. They haven't been talking for a while as they've been living apart. And Shruti has developed feelings for one of her coworkers who is a single father. Shruti starts to confide in Parth about this because he also lives in Delhi. So they've been hanging out. And Parth, great friend that he is, sees Chumki in the distance and just chases after her mid-conversation.
Aside from how terrible that makes Parth come off as,
I
would have really appreciated that insight to what Shruti is thinking and feeling, because we do not get that opportunity again.
We do not. That's a great point.
I'm like, how do you go from being so in love and so connected to then it feels like as soon as they moved away, she had already decided, okay, that's over.
Right.
You know, like, we don't see any evidence of them really trying to make it work, or her holding this resentment against him for, like, the abortion. We don't see that, if that is what's going on. And so it just feels weird that she would then just immediately be like, ooh, but I really like this guy.
Right. And I think we are supposed to believe that she is feeling resentful towards Akash.
Yeah.
But she did not get the abortion. And I guess we don't know that for sure at this point, but we have a sense.
Yes.
So it's just, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah. I keep thinking, like, were we trying to show how important healthy communication is?
Sure.
Because, like, if they had this, their relationship would have been smoother. But they never really have healthy communication about what happened.
No.
So,
and they still end up together at the end.
Yeah, what's the point? Why are we here?
I don't know. Maybe just to be sad. The description did say it was bittersweet, so here's the bitter.
Yeah.
So yeah, Parth goes chasing after Chumki, and he asks for them to meet up, and she agrees. So when they meet up, he asks her why she's getting married, and she says that Anand is her comfort zone. And so Parth compares her relationship to a pair of old slippers that need to be thrown away. Akash and Shruti finally talk, and Akash tells her that the music thing isn't working out, he's done trying. And we've seen him have unsuccessful stuff happen. And Shruti agrees with this decision, but she says that she's going to stay in Delhi at her job, and she says that Akash doesn't know what he wants from life and calls him a loser, essentially.
Yeah, this was also a weird conversation because Akash doesn't really react.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have a ton of inflection in her voice either. Like, I couldn't tell if we were having what is their version of, like, a tough love. Like, hey, I've noticed that you do this. That's something for you to work on. But I'm saying this out of love. Or if she's just, like, belittling him. And he seemed confused about it, too.
Yeah, he wasn't sure how to take it either. Yeah, I think, again, it's like the dynamics just were not clear between these two or what it was that we were actually trying to do with their relationship. Meanwhile, Pihu, who again is Monty and Kajal's daughter, her friend has a crush on a boy, but that boy thinks that Pihu has a crush on him and he likes her. And Pihu kind of has a crush on him, but mostly has a crush on her friend.
Yep.
And so she calls Chumki, who, remember, is her aunt, and asks her for help, and Chumki suggests that she kiss a boy and kiss a girl and see if she likes one or the other or both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it does depend on the boy and the girl, but she chooses.
I kind of feel like if I were Chumki, like if one of my nephews were coming to me and saying this, I would say, well, it sounds like you might be bisexual or maybe pansexual, and I think you could just be interested in whoever you're interested in.
Right. Like, if you have a crush on them, pursue it. See what happens. I am grateful they do talk about how, like, you don't have to define yourself.
Yeah.
Now. There's no rush. You don't have to define yourself ever.
No, that's true.
You can just like who you like. Done. Yeah. I liked that conversation. I don't know that I love the later on development of the storyline.
Yeah. We'll... She makes a choice.
Yeah.
That's that I think, again, you know, someone, if they had found out about it, would maybe have wanted to have a talk to her about. But anyway, we'll get to that when we get to it. Chumki meets up with Parth again. They get drunk together, and Parth once again questions Chumki's relationship with Anand and love in general. Chumki says that she has seen real love in her sister's marriage and in her parents, but Parth says that the only thing marriage teaches you is acting.
That's terrible.
I know. And to underline this point, as this scene is happening, Chumki's dad is telling Shivani that she can't go to her college reunion, and Kajal is pretending to be Maya, the woman from Linger, and promising Monty that they will meet in person.
Yeah.
Parth makes fun of Anand, and Chumki calls Parth a commitment-phobic man-child who plays with other people's emotions so he doesn't have to face his own. She read him for filth.
Yeah.
She tells him that one day he'll meet the right girl and then he'll change his mind. And as she leaves, he nods longingly after her. So then, Kajal plans this whole elaborate ruse where Monty goes to a hotel thinking he's meeting Maya, but she humiliates him by blindfolding him, stripping him unconsentingly, may we point out, stripping him down to his underwear and leaving him in the hotel lobby. And I had a big problem with this. I'm sure I'm not alone.
This made me really sad.
Yeah.
Like, no, we've now crossed the line into humiliation.
Yes.
Which is not okay. No. Now, you could have just come out of the bathroom and been like, haha, I got you. Like, yep. We are now going to talk about this. I'm confronting you about your infidelity. And instead,
Yeah, like, I think the humiliation thing is too far. And also, the fact that the characters are doing it is one thing, but to put in a movie a man begging for her to stop as she is taking his clothes off, I'm sorry, what do you think you're doing? Right. It's 2025.
Yeah.
That is not okay. That is not okay to play for comedy in your movie. People of all genders get sexually assaulted by people of all gender identities. It is not okay to put it in your movie and play it for comedy. Like, I took I was really unhappy to see that.
Yeah.
But what I was not unhappy to see is that Monty returns home wearing a Bears Beats Battlestar Galactica t-shirt, so that's fun.
Oh my gosh, I missed that. Bears Beats Battlestar Galactica.
Truly iconic. But yeah, so he gets home and he sees Kajal leaving with Pihu, and as they get on the elevator, Kajal throws his clothes from the hotel after him to make the point. She knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Shruti almost gets physical with the coworker who she has been emotionally cheating with.
Yeah.
And a call from Akash interrupts her. She lies and tells him that she's at home and then calls Parth to give her a ride. But when she and Parth pull up, Akash is waiting for her outside of her apartment. And we have already seen that he is suspicious that there's something going on between her and Parth.
Yeah.
And so he gets violent, and then he questions whether Shruti was ever having his baby in the first place.
There's a lot happening here.
Yeah. Shruti slaps him and calls him a loser. Oh, this is where she calls him a loser. And says he'll die a failure. Now, it was out of line for Akash to say this, but let's not forget the fact that he's accusing Shruti of cheating on him. And he's only wrong about the person she's cheating with. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I mean, again, none of this is a healthy situation.
No.
None of it. And I think a lot of it would have been avoided had they actually, like, talked.
Imagine that. Akash leaves, but then Shruti tells Parth that she is going after him. And when Parth, as you said before, points out that this relationship is toxic, she's like, well, you don't know anything about love or marriage, which...
It's always toxic.
Yeah, this is normal. It's like, no, it's not. And listen to your friend. I actually think your friends who haven't been in relationships can give you really good relationship advice, because you're not supposed to be unhappy.
Yeah. I think, like, fundamentally, that's the main issue with this film, is that I feel like it normalizes a lot of stuff that should not be normalized.
Yes. And I'm glad that we do get some examples of couples who, like, talk to each other and do then get to, like, progress forward in their relationship in a healthy way. We don't get to actually see those conversations happen, though, and that would have been nice.
No. Yeah. We had, again, almost 3 hours.
Plenty of time. So then Pihu goes on a school trip, and she tells Monty to promise her that he and Mom will pick her up together when she gets back. Kajal has been staying with her parents, and Monty goes and tells Kajal that she should forgive him for her own good because she's in pain. And Kajal's like, no, that's not how that works. I am mad at you.
That was, like, classic Pankaj Tripathi, like, charm. It's like, well, no, it's for you,
but
though.
But you're in pain. He's Pankajing all over the place.
I love him so much.
I know, I do too. But so Shivani tells Kajal to give Monty another chance. And then Kajal reveals that her dad cheated on Shivani when Kajal was a teenager. And Kajal says that she knew that this was happening, but she kept it a secret from her parents that she knew. And she used to turn up the volume on her TV so Chumki wouldn't hear Shivani crying.
This is one of the best monologues or whatever, like, whatever you want to call it, in the whole film. I think it is the number one best part. Like,
I agree.
The emotion and, like, pointing out the reality. And then it felt like it didn't have any impact.
Yeah, like, the reveal is also so interesting. The reveal that there is infidelity happening here. And I feel like, and this is the kind of thing that I usually say at the end, but I'll say it now, because that's kind of what we've been doing. I wish that they had taken the part with the dad talking to Kajal and put it at the end. Because then to, like, hear this conversation where Shivani is being reminded of what her husband did to her, and then she makes the choice of, like, well, you know what? I don't owe him anything. And then to have there be, like, reconciliation at the end, that makes more sense.
Right.
Narratively just makes more sense. Also in this, Kajal calls Shivani a coward for staying with dad after the affair. And she says that she hates herself for turning into her mother. Kajal hates herself for turning into Shivani. This dynamic between the mother and daughter is never addressed. Nor is the fact that Shivani says at the start of the movie that she feels like her whole family has moved on without her. She doesn't have a meaningful conversation with either of her daughters where they can validate her. And that also bothered me.
That's so true. I also just, as we're talking about a lot of, like, missed opportunities.
Yeah.
I do think that the whole, like, well, I stayed because of the kids reasoning is used in a lot of explanations of, like, why you didn't pursue a divorce, why you didn't leave. And I think it's such an interesting topic because oftentimes, are the kids really that much better off than they would have been if you had split and both parents had been happier apart than they were together? Not that they had to dig into that in this movie, but, like, there's so much more meat they could have delved into, but I think there was already way too much on the plate to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, you got to take a bite of all of the side dishes that they presented to you. You can't just focus on the meat.
Yeah, and there's been too many side dishes here.
Too many side dishes, I agree, and we could have just had the meat.
Yeah, I like meat and side dishes.
Yeah, I think, yeah, a good balance is important, but in this case, maybe not.
It was too much.
Anyway, so we also quickly in here learn that Shruti is still pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell her that she's so far along that she needs to decide in a week or two whether or not she's going to keep the baby.
Yeah, I also got confused about the timing of things.
I agree, because they say that she's, I think, like 18 or 19 weeks along. Yes. So that's how long it's been since they conceived, not even since the start of the movie.
So basically that means they were long distance for not that long.
Like 3
when
months.
She immediately was like, great, I'm going to have an emotional affair.
Yeah.
With my new coworker and just completely give up on my previous relationship.
Right. This movie was written by men, and I think that this is one of the particular moments where that stands out.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think that the pregnancy part of this makes as much sense as they maybe would have wanted it to.
Once you say someone's pregnant, you're working on a timeline here.
Yeah, seriously. But so, yeah, she and Akash are living together again, but they're not talking to each other, and so he still doesn't know she's pregnant. Great. So Kajal's dad then tells her that he understands the situation she's in, even though he was on the other side of the infidelity in his marriage, but he learned his lesson and now his family means everything to him.
But clearly it doesn't.
I know.
He forgot his wife.
Like, yes.
Nothing has changed. You're not showing what you're claiming to feel.
Right. Yes, exactly. That's why this doesn't end up having as much emotional impact as it could have had. But so he tells Kajal to give Monty another chance and suggests that they go away together and try and fall in love with each other again. And if they're not successful, he says he will help her pay for a divorce. So Kajal and Monty leave together, but things fall apart pretty quickly when Monty confesses to talking to 7 different women on Linger and coming close to kissing one of them.
Yeah.
So there's some back and forth. Ultimately, Kajal abandons Monty at a roadside snack shop.
Yeah.
Deservedly.
I think he deserves it. Yeah. Like, that kind of stuff, fine.
Yes, that I agree with. Back at her parents' house, Chumki finds a note from Shivani to her dad saying that she is going to her reunion on her own, and noting that there were times when dad didn't call her for a week, she's sure he can go 2 days without her. At the reunion, the guests catch up musically over tea, and Shivani says she's lost herself in the routine of being a housewife and wants more.
Mm-hmm.
Parimal tells his story. His wife and son died tragically in a rickshaw accident, leaving him and his daughter-in-law alone together, just like Sholay, I wrote.
Horrible.
But this brings the mood down, obviously.
Yeah.
We then see Kajal cut her hair and befriend a handsome man named Aryan, and she introduces herself to him as Maya.
There's so many choices being made here. Like, I'm sorry, but the tit for tat thing in a relationship is not a healthy way to proceed. And
no.
Yeah.
No. I understand why the character is making this choice. And also, like we said, they do kind of lose the plot a little bit through this whole thing.
Yeah.
But so Chumki meets up with Parth again, and he reveals he's getting married. And then Parimal meets up with the guy Rohan again, and Rohan says that Parimal's son told Jinook that she needed to take care of Parimal, and those were, like, literally his last words to her, were, like, take care of my dad.
Don't put that on people.
No, please. And Parimal tells Rohan that he relates to Jinook's lack of courage now to actually, like, be with the one she loves, i.e. Rohan.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells Rohan to have courage and patience.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
I don't know. You know, also,
I'm losing my mind. Also, it's like, there's so many people.
There's so many people, so many things. I also just had the thought that there's so many actions happening, but not enough dialogue. Like, there aren't enough heart-to-heart conversations between characters to make the actions or to put the actions into context.
I agree.
There's a lot going unsaid that should not be going unsaid.
Yes. And I think the heart-to-heart conversations that we are seeing are between the wrong people.
Yes. 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 Well, because I was also just thinking of Kajal and, like, her decision, because it's like she's looking for that attention she doesn't get from her husband, which is fine. But then I would want her to have more of a conversation with the guy. Instead of what they end up talking about, I'd want them to talk about that.
Yeah. I think there were opportunities for character growth and emotional development to happen, and they just didn't take them. They used those opportunities to do something else.
And then it feels like when you, like, start to trip, when you're moving really fast and you kind of run to try to catch yourself, but then you trip more and you're about to, like, hit the ground.
Yeah, that is kind of what the end of this movie feels like. So Monty makes his way to Goa, and he locates Kajal and sees her with Aryan. And there's this whole thing where he's, like, following them around Goa. I didn't write down all their conversations because, like you said, they kind of don't matter. Shivani and Parimal chat, and Shivani ends up choosing to stay longer in whatever city they're in and spend the day with Parimal. And they go and see a play together, and she says that she misses acting, and Parimal offers her an Oscar-worthy role. Together, the two of them stumble back to Parimal's apartment, pretending to have just gotten married, and they're rude to Jinook and kick her out of her room.
Yeah. At first, I thought this was delightful, and then I was like, this is cruel and unusual punishment.
Yes, it is. Because Parimal tells Shivani he wants Jinook to hate him so that she leaves him to be with Rohan.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Could you not have just sat down this sweet woman who lost her husband very young, who's also your son, and then just said, hey, he actually would have really wanted you and Rohan to be happy together.
Yeah.
I will be okay. You go be happy. We can visit. It's fine. Isn't that a much better way forward?
Because this does not alleviate her guilt. Like, she does not get to, oh, good, okay, now I don't need to feel guilty that I'm not fulfilling my husband's dying wish. She has to make the choice to abandon this man who is forcing her out of his home when she would have chosen to stay.
Yeah.
And what I really thought was going to happen is that Jinook was going to be like, I see what's happening here. I see that you're trying to force me out. And they were going to have, like, a heart-to-heart about it. But no.
No. No resolution there. But guess that relationship is shot.
It's just, yeah. So Chumki, Shivani, and Kajal all FaceTime. Everyone sees Shivani with Paramal and Kajal with Aryan. So Chumki is questioning everything. She goes to work where her boss puts his arm around her in front of Anand, and Anand says and does nothing. Anand then explains to Chumki that he doesn't want to tell their boss about their relationship because his boss has a thing for Chumki and he won't like Anand after that.
That's the wrong thing to say, Anand. Yeah.
Super, super healthy.
It's the wrong way to be in general.
Chumki meets up with Parth again and they play a screaming game, which leads to a big emotional release for Chumki, and she says he was right, nothing is permanent and everyone is just pretending. But he cheers her up, and then she gathers the courage to confront her boss, she slaps him, and she quits.
Which, slapping was also a choice.
Yeah, she didn't have to do that, but she, you know. And it's also, like, she could have, like, gone and told HR so he got fired. Well,
did you hear she is HR? She's in HR, and I had that thought. Yes, I had that thought.
That's right, they make the joke about him. Yeah.
I was like, girl, you're in HR. Like, yeah. You have extensive training on how to handle these situations, and this is what you chose to do?
Yeah. I do. What? I think I also just, like, narratively wish that this weren't a story about a woman who loses her job because she confronts her boss about sexually assaulting her. I wish that there had been repercussions for the boss. That would have been
satisfying. That just gets glossed over.
Yeah. Anand tells her to apologize, but she's like, no, I did what I had to do, and then they kind of sort of break up.
Mm-hmm.
She meets up with Parth again, and she tells him that she's not going to his wedding, and he tells her that if he ever decides to have an affair, she'll be the first person he calls. Cute.
Great.
In Goa, Kajal gets drunk and Monty makes sure she gets home safely. He falls asleep beside her, but in the morning she calls security to have him forcibly removed from the room.
This is also, like, I just feel like you reach a point where it's like, okay, we just should have a conversation.
Yes, she is being cruel. Like, he did do wrong. She is being unnecessarily cruel, in my opinion.
It's like, again, either you're like, nope, this isn't happening. I want to be alone. We're getting a divorce.
Yep.
Or
you leave
you're
the door
like,
open.
Okay, yeah.
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 Not this weird, like, swinging it open
and
shut
I don't
thing.
Find it funny.
No. Yeah. I just feel bad for this man.
Yeah. Who I don't really want to feel bad for.
No, because he did a bad thing.
Right. It's all very confusing.
It is. Meanwhile, on her school trip, Pihoo kisses the boy who likes her, but then she tries to make a move on her friend while her friend is sleeping, which understandably does not go over well, and the friend starts giving her the cold shoulder, which could just have easily have been about the, like, attempting to kiss her in her sleep thing as much as the queer thing.
The just kiss. Yes. Yeah.
So Shivani and Paramal stage a fight with Junook that ends with Paramal promising to sign over all his money to her if she leaves now. So she leaves and Paramal tells Shivani that some relationships don't break on their own. You have to break them with force.
Except that you don't have to break them at all.
Right. Not all relationships have to break at all.
Like, what?
Yeah. So we see her get into a cab with Rohan and I don't know, hopefully she lives happily ever after.
Yeah, that's the last we see of her.
Yep. Then Shivani's husband sees her with Paramal. Shruti tells Akash she's leaving. Okay, bye. Mm-hmm. And then Chumki, Kajal, and Shivani all FaceTime again. And while they're on the phone, Anand shows up and tells Chumki that he quit his job for her.
He didn't have to quit his job.
No.
You know, I just
trying to make a grand romantic gesture, I guess.
The time for showing solidarity and the time for, like, a, quote, grand romantic gesture was when she was like, I'm being sexually harassed.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to do something about it. Will you support me?
And I think you could also do something about it for me, with me.
Yes. And he was like, no. You don't then get to be like, oh, but I quit my job for you. No. Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. You missed your chance, bro. But on this FaceTime call, Shivani says that she wishes her life could always be the way it is now, and that when we make the safe choice in life, we spend the rest of our time wondering what if. She says deep down, your heart knows what it wants, and she thinks it's better to take a risk and deal with the fallout later.
Right, but then she doesn't? Like, I'm so confused. Like, we're getting wisdom that then's not, it's not followed.
Right. The only purpose that this wisdom is serving is to get Chumki to make the choice that she makes. But what we needed for Shivani was her to say, and I'm glad I entertained that, but ultimately I'm going back to my husband because I love him yes. and that's the right choice. Or whatever.
Yes, we needed an additional piece to yes. that. Again, to add context to the yeah. action.
Right. Yeah. And that can still mean that Chumki gets to take the risk because she's facing the risk now. Shivani's chance to take right. that risk has already passed, really. I don't know. Shivani's husband fights Paramal. I kind of lost track of what was going on there. Kajal kisses Aryan. Chumki leaves Anand and goes to find Parth. Shruti goes to have an abortion for real this time, while Akash finally gets his big chance at singing, but the song is about a father singing to his child, so he just breaks down in the middle of it.
That is just a movie moment.
Yeah.
This man who literally threw away everything for his big break at music should not now throw away his big break.
I know! I was, like, really upset that that's how it went.
Because it's all for nothing.
Like, I wanted that to be, like, he, like, rocks it because he can bring that emotion to it.
Yes.
Instead of just, like, leaving halfway through.
If I were Shruti,
Yeah.
I'd be mad.
If I were Shruti, I would have made so many different choices in this movie.
Yes. Well, that's so true.
But, so yeah, Kajal almost hooks up with Aryan, but she stops him, wondering why she still loves Monty. And Monty sees them together, but he still follows Kajal when she leaves the next morning. Pihu and her classmates are packing up from their trip, and her friend is still ignoring her, but she confesses her confusion to the boy, and he says he'll wait for her to figure it out, which was very sweet.
That was cute, yeah.
Chumki gets on the train that Parth is taking with his family to go get married, but she ends up on the wrong car. They talk across the divide, and she says she likes his company and likes herself more when she's with him, which is very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
He asks if she loves him, and at first she can't say it, but then she does confess her love. Then Parth tells his family that he is no longer marrying the woman that he was going to marry. And Chumki clarifies that she doesn't want to marry him in this moment. And so Parth suggests that they get fake married.
Yeah, and that's that.
And that's what they apparently do.
Also, isn't his bride also on this train?
I don't think so, because they're going to Shimla, where she is.
Oh, where she is. It felt very out of the blue that he was like, I'm getting married. And yeah. I just would have liked confirmation on whether it was just his family who's been, like, pushing him to get married. And he was finally like, all right, fine. You know, like, why did he suddenly decide he was going to get married? I actually was under the impression that it was all a ruse. Like,
I was too.
He had staged this elaborate thing because he's into theater.
Yeah.
And that it was going to be like I'm not actually getting married. This was just to see if you would, like, confess your feelings. But I know it's real.
I thought that too. And so watching Life in a Metro, I think that Anurag Basu just wanted to echo the story that happens in that movie where the two characters met as like a, you know, like testing a possible arranged marriage situation and then go their separate ways and then come back and fall for each other. But he has found a woman who will marry him in the meantime.
Yes.
So she goes and interrupts his wedding. That makes sense.
Yes.
This doesn't make sense, but he just kind of wanted to tell a similar story, I think. Like, yeah. just kind of, and yeah, I don't think it worked.
I also feel like Chumki should be single for a bit, figure herself out.
Yeah.
She also has a drinking problem that's not acknowledged.
She does, yes.
Like, gets her drunk even when she's like, I really probably shouldn't drink because don't do well.
And Anand, like, sees her drinking problem and tries to get her not to drink. And it sort of played as, like, oh, look how controlling he is. And I was like, yes. No, I actually think he's helping her to make a healthy yes. choice.
Because, like, her level of inability to function when she's drinking is not funny.
No, it's not. It's a problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just also just thrown into the mix here.
Yeah. Like,
Yeah. I don't think they're going to last long.
No, me neither, except that they're tied together by a kid. But anyway, Akash goes to Shruti to, like, apologize. They weep. He says that he's been selfish and he knows it's too late, but he wants her and nothing else. But Shruti tells him it's not too late. Did she get the abortion? I don't actually know.
They put her under. I'm so confused. Like, you can't just wake up from being put under in surgery and be like, actually, no.
I don't know. Yeah, all right. I don't know. The kid that gets born, I don't know if it's that kid or a different kid.
Yeah, they don't make that clear. And also, no. I'm like, okay, are you guys just not going to talk about...
I don't think so.
Like, all the bad stuff?
Yeah, no, I don't think they are. But so Chumki brings Parth to meet her family. At the celebration, Monty asks Kajal if they can start over or if she wants a divorce. And he says he doesn't care what happened in Goa. He doesn't care about anything that happened before this moment. He'll follow her for the rest of his life. And on their drive home, they bicker over directions just like they used to. And Pihu kisses them both on the cheek. So that's okay.
That's kind of nice.
We kind of got somewhere with that.
Yeah, it's kind of resolved. I wouldn't say it's fully resolved, but it's more resolved than, like, most of the other ones.
Right. But so some time passes, enough time for Parth to grow a really big bushy beard. And
I love when they do that just to show the passage of time.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. But Chumki is pregnant. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Shruti and Akash have a baby together, but we see them bickering in the same way that we saw Monty and Kajal bickering in, like, a flashback earlier. So that suggests that they're still unhappy and always will be. So that's great.
Yeah.
And we also see Shivani acting in a play and her husband is there watching her. So, like, presumably we can assume that she's happy and got to do some stuff. Paramal is just alone.
Yeah. Now he doesn't even have a daughter-in-law to call because he burned that bridge.
Right. So he's just alone. And Pihu and that boy are still friends as she continues to figure out her sexuality. The end.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. My God. Wild. Yeah. I think we said all the things that I was going to say.
Yeah. I'm just processing.
Oh, you know what's one thing I was going to say about it is how interesting I think it is to see this movie that's like, it's not anti-housewife, but it's very much like some women feel trapped by that and should get to choose how they live their lives. I think it's so interesting to see that messaging so focused, so featured in a movie, when in the US we have this shift towards, like, the trad wife going on.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, it's this interesting thing of, like, seeing this country where feminism is kind of trying to blossom, and then in our country, people are trying to, like, tamp down feminism and say it's a bad thing. So yeah, that was just an interesting thing I was thinking
about. That's a good observation. I had one more thing. Chumki's whole thing is, like, stability, that she's seeking stability and she wants to be with Anand because he's stable, even though she herself is not stable.
No.
And then I understand she, like, takes the risk on Parth, who is also not stable. But I'm kind of like, okay, he doesn't really have, like, a stable job. And you don't have a job, but you have a child. Like, I think I would have liked just maybe more of that, more of a snapshot into their life to see, like, is she happy with the choice she made? Or did she end up kind of like her mother no matter what?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And what I'm also realizing is, like, this movie had the potential to, like, explore some kind of darker, sadder emotions. Yes. And it totally could have done that. And Life in a Metro does.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally an attempted suicide in that movie. I think it's interesting that there really isn't that same kind of exploration of that, even though there was the potential, and I think it would have made it a more compelling movie.
Yeah. I feel like, in general, the balance was off.
Yeah.
It kind of just fell flat. Like, I felt like the things that were supposed to be funny weren't very funny. The things that were supposed to maybe, like, strike us in the heart more didn't really. Like, the only time I really felt any sort of emotion was Kajal's speech to her mom.
Yeah.
And because that actually had emotion.
Right. And that dynamic didn't even get fully explored.
No. Yeah.
So I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
It's a lot of, like, I want to like it for what it could have been, but I have to look at it for what it is.
Yes, which wasn't very good.
Yeah, which is fine. Okay, do we want to talk about reviews?
Yeah.
I'm going to just start with the critics' reviews. I only looked at two.
Okay.
One of which was Anupama Chopra.
Of course.
So she praises the first half.
Mm-hmm.
However, she says that the film trips on too much muchness.
Ah, yes.
Which I'm like, yeah. She says that the film is too long and that the songs are lovely, but they blur together from overuse.
Mm-hmm.
She does make an interesting comparison, though, saying that the musicians work like a Greek chorus, heightening and underlining the world of emotions. The twists and turns in the lives of the film's characters are punctuated by these musical interludes, but this time Basu also attempts a Hollywood musical style. So, song replaces dialogue, and characters look directly at the camera and perform to it, which is only intermittently successful.
Yep. That was also, I will say, like, that's how the musicians were used in Life in a Metro, as kind of the Greek chorus, you know, like,
yeah, and I loved the story, that.
And that was great.
Yeah. There was never a moment in Metro and Dino that I didn't like seeing those musicians.
Yeah.
But it felt like the story didn't rise to meet the tone that they were setting.
Yep, I agree.
And Anupama ends her review by saying, the bottom line is that a film about the glorious messiness of love should have been more buoyant.
Sure.
Yeah. Just an interesting note about Anupama's review, because this was a filmed review that was on YouTube.
Mm.
All the comments were from people saying that they loved Metro in Dino, and they completely disagree with her. And someone also points out that she had called Ludo mediocre, only for it to become highly popular and praised.
Listen, everyone makes mistakes, even
and
Anupama
we've disagreed,
Chopra. Yeah.
We've disagreed with Anupama Chopra before. I just thought that was interesting. I
that
do, because I feel like it's important to acknowledge where people do love the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Anyway, the other critic I read was Rahul Desai, writing for The Hollywood Reporter India, and his review was titled, Anurag Basu Finds Chaos in the Calm, which is maybe not great.
Where was their calm?
I don't know. In it, Desai first writes of the 2007 film Life in a Metro. There was a sense of exploration and discovery in the way the film unfolded. The city of Mumbai being a storyteller with a live band and its many lives, the stories. Desai goes on to discuss Metro in Dino as a mix of all Basu's previous films, with Jaga Jasu's coded song, conflicts descending into Ludo-coded chaos, and heartbreaks draped in barfy-coded silences. Desai calls it a bloated, in parentheses, 159 minutes are a lot, over-designed and occasionally poignant film whose identity is consumed by labels rather than places or people.
Hmm.
It has that trademark Basu Pratham trait. When it works, it really works. But when it doesn't, it's like watching a star athlete hindered by the pressure of their own talent. He also writes that most of the situations are exaggerated, frivolous even. But they hint at a deeper curiosity about human relationships, the chasm between how we think and what we say. When Chumki starts to see the truth of her family, her disillusionment is based on the premise that every partner has adjusted and nobody is happy. She's the only one in the position to alter her future before she enters it, a reflection of how we craft identities not on our own terms, but as a reaction to the histories and traumas we inherit.
Hmm.
She thinks she can avoid the mistakes of her elders, but the film's choice to normalize their fate and look for acceptance within it suggests that everyone is interconnected, whether they know it or not. I was like, that's a really interesting take on Chumki, which I appreciated.
Yeah. the point about the kind of like past trauma making a decision would have been really interesting to explore if it didn't then work out for her. Like,
right.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I almost feel like this would have worked better if the guy she was with was the risky choice. And she's taking that choice because her family made her think that that was the better choice since they took the safe route. But then she ends up with the safe guy at the end. I don't know. That kind of keeps the theme a little more consistent.
Right. Yeah. And Desai ends his review by saying, every now and then, though, a stray note of perfection emerges. Like the riff of an electric guitar syncing with the image of a broken wife telling her husband what a loser he is. Or the glimpse of a widower willing to invite loneliness and rupture the traditional narrative of caregiving. or a crestfallen woman accusing her mother of settling for a thankless life in front of the men that erased them, or a couple mentally reading texts with each other's inflections, or even the vintage rom-com formula of a station dash and an indecisive proposal. These moments are the why we go to the movies moments. For a split second, nothing else matters. Which is like a romantic note to end on.
Yeah.
And like, those moments are powerful, but I was so distracted.
Yeah.
And consumed by all the other pieces, both the pieces that were way too present and the pieces that were missing, to really fully let myself be in those moments, again, other than the conversation between Kajol and her mother.
Yeah. Those moments were too few and far between. I wish that what had happened is we just took Akash and Shruti out of this movie entirely. Just nix them.
Yeah.
And then use the space that that leaves,
yes,
to really explore the other relationships more emotionally.
I feel like Akash and Shruti should have their own film.
Yeah.
Like, if that's a story you want to explore, it deserves its own.
I agree.
Movie.
I agree.
There's so much there,
yeah,
to unpack and look into and explore. It should not have been part of an ensemble
I agree.
Situation.
A disservice was done to those two characters.
So I have a few audience reviews just to mention some quotes that stood out to me. Someone said, "The film captures relevant emotional and relational issues, urban isolation, generational gaps, infidelity, and the search for meaningful connection, but the second half becomes extremely far-fetched and loses momentum later on, making the end less tight and out of context."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
which
that's very
I
well
agree.
Put.
Someone else said, "The trope of first casually sabotaging a relationship and then applying a bandage over it used to work 18 years ago, but not today. People understand the value of a relationship and what it takes to build it, no matter what kind of past they have. I found the movie way too negative."
Yeah.
Which I think is the thing, is that, like, you know, some of them end on, like, a quote-unquote positive note, like some of the storylines, but not with any, like, again, substance to that positive note.
Right.
It just feels like we're told, like, oh, it's okay, they live happily ever after, but I don't believe it.
This is a weird comparison to make, but the movie Love Actually isn't,
yes,
uh-huh, isn't a good movie, and people are very problematic in that movie too. But what I think that that movie does well is there are some stories that end where you're like, this is so happy and beautiful and I believe in this love story, and then there are others,
yeah,
where you're like, well, I mean, I hope that that turns out to be the right choice for them, but I don't know. And then there are others,
yeah,
where it's like, good, they shouldn't have been together, so let's,
yes,
yeah, that's exactly what should have happened. And I think that this movie could have done that.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, for this to be believable, there should have been a switch up in how some of those stories ended. Someone else, like another audience reviewer, which I really appreciated this comment, said, "What disappointed me the most was how blatantly it promoted and normalized cheating in relationships, mm-hmm, almost as if infidelity is something to be sympathized with or even celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
That's not progressive. It's irresponsible storytelling. On top of that, there's no real plot. The movie feels like a series of disconnected scenes with no meaningful direction or emotional depth. It tries to juggle multiple stories but fails to develop any of them properly."
Yeah, I think with the infidelity thing especially, like, I mean, we've heard things like that said in these movies before. I think it would have been really interesting to explore that, like, culturally, if that is actually,
yes,
like, genuinely something that certain people, I wouldn't say everyone, but that certain people believe.
Yeah.
Explore that. Like,
right.
But it does, I agree that, I don't think that it, like, promotes infidelity, but it certainly suggests that infidelity is something that is easy to get past in a relationship, even if it causes strain.
Right. And some people do, like, some people are,
yeah,
able to do that, but it is, like, very specific to the individuals involved and the context around what happens and why,
yep,
it happens and how it happens. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. In fact, I think Akash and Shruti is one of the examples that a couple could come back from.
Yes.
But again, they were done such a disservice by the short form storytelling that they were put into. Like, we don't get to see that fully played out.
Right. And I'll end on a more positive note, just because I feel like we've said a lot of things,
yeah,
about Metro and Dino. But One audience member wrote, "This film isn't trying to impress. It's just honest, and that's what makes it hit. Relationships are messy, people are flawed, and life doesn't always come with closure." I feel like that's maybe giving a cop-out to the
yes.
the movie makers, but sure.
I think that's a generous read, but yes, I think that that is a positive place that you could land when mm-hmm. criticizing this movie. Yeah, absolutely. Lot to say, well, lot to talk about.
There was more than I expected. Like, I knew I kind of had those thoughts, but yeah, like us actually sitting and going through it, I was like, wow, I really had more thoughts than I realized.
Same. Yeah, I had written some things down, but I was like, yeah, there's a lot to unpack here for sure.
Bollywood stuff.
Okay, I have two really quick things that I feel like are important to bring up because, as we will share in just a moment, we are not going to be watching traditional spooky season stuff for October this year. But so I want to mention two spooky-ish movies that we will be watching soon after they come out. First of all, we got a full trailer for the movie Tama, which is the vampire movie.
Yes!
It looks really good. Nawazuddin Siddiqui is in it, which I don't think I had realized before, but we love him. And it also looks like Satyaraj is in it reprising his role that he, because he was in Munjia, which I had forgotten about.
Yes.
But then he showed up in the trailer, so I was like, oh, cool. And Baydia cameo, if not a Varun cameo.
Okay, love it. I mean, they have to keep the
cinematic universe
yeah. going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see what other tie-ins we get. But so that looks really good. That's coming out in October. Hopefully we'll be able to stream it, you know, early next year. We also got a full trailer for the movie Rajasab, which I briefly mentioned in a previous episode, but this is Prabhas's horror comedy, yes. which is coming out in January. Looks like it could be fun. Looks like it could be terrible. Either way, probably gonna be enjoyable to consume.
Prabhasli.
There's like some haunted house stuff, some supernatural fight scenes. Again, looks entertaining.
Thank you. Pluggables.
Mm-hmm.
Follow us at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood on Instagram. Do what you do there. Also, consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You could even leave a rating or review if you want to.
Indeed.
But regardless of what you do and do not do, thanks so much for listening.
Yes, and join us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists, adding the songs that we love from the movies that we watch, and we link those playlists in our episode descriptions, as well as in our Instagram posts when they happen, so you can listen along with all those fine tunes.
Yes.
All right, so next time we will be watching not Badass of Bollywood, because that's not what it's called. Bads!
Or maybe it is. We don't know.
Bads of Bollywood we will be watching.
Yeah.
First four episodes for mm-hmm. our next episode, and then the remaining three for the following episode.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll see what we feel about it. I'm going into it neutral.
I'm going into it neutral as well. I think we're going to get some awesome cameos. I think we're going to hopefully get some fun commentary on the industry, mm-hmm. if not within the show itself, certainly in what we talk about outside of the show.
Yeah.
But I'm excited just because this has been teased for so long, and I think people are talking about it, so let's talk about it too.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see how Aryan Khan does.
Yeah. On IMDb, our plot description is an entertaining ride through the adventures of an ambitious outsider navigating the glitzy yet tricky world of Bollywood with self-aware humor, cameos, and larger-than-life characters for a tongue-in-cheek take on Indian cinema.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, me too.
Bads of Bollywood is available to watch on Netflix, and the Netflix synopsis says, a fearless newcomer plunges into the dazzling world of showbiz, where harsh surprises lurk at every corner.
Ooh.
And then it just says, with cameos from the biggest Bollywood stars.
Yeah, that's certainly what it looks like.
Yeah, which is a little bit of like a, we get it, you know everyone in the industry. But I am not going in with any sort of preconceived notion. Yeah. I'm looking for entertainment, and I think we're going to get it.
I think we shall be entertained.
Wonderful. So yeah, watch it, enjoy, and remember, Bollywood doesn't need us.
No.
But we need Bollywood.
We need Bollywood. We need clear communication with our romantic partners.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, for everyone to just show up in their relationships would be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe like a little less infidelity.
That's something we don't need, is
infidelity. Yeah.